tension is riding high in the C4 Studios and across the pond. This is our darkest hour. We need someone like Harry Potter to
come and save us.
Katniss Everdeen, some schmuck named fucking Max from some shitball YA novel.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Eating Ham. Yes, please. I'm Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hey, Aaron.
And Brick.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well. Today's topic is... young adult literature. We've talked about this before a couple times, but never, I think, in a dedicated way, at least on this podcast. We have talked about it before on previous iterations of the podcast that are now hidden from public sight. I think the question here, or maybe the inciting sort of, I guess the motive for this question is the popularity of YA, both culturally, but also among people who are not the Y or A part of that equation, right? Lots of our peers read YA, including several, many of us read YA.
Can we call it Ya?
Yeah.
Prefer to call it Ya.
I'm gonna call it Ya.
Or the Ya Brotherhood.
Yeah, right. Our peers are reading Ya increasingly. I'd say more common, and probably even more common to find people who exclusively read Ya these days, as opposed to reading literary fiction, which might be a sort of more expected or traditional sort of reading habit for people we would sort of consider our peers. So what's behind that, do you think? And do you guys read YA or Ya? And what compels you or not, or anything like that?
We talked about a demarcation, right? Or two, in fact, this morning, right? Where, like,
I think Harry Potter and Twilight were the clear sort of pivot point.
Did they begin simultaneously?
No, but that's why I think there's three parts where that, like, sort of when those were contemporary, like, that was, like, the era, right? So I think kind of pre-Harry Potter is children's books / books for young teens or whatever sort of fit into a certain mold. You know, they were either, like, chapter books, or it was things like Wrinkle in Time and Ender's Game and stuff like that.
Hatchet is like a quintessential YA novel, right? That seems like from our youth, that seems like
That one would maybe be more towards like chapter book territory.
Yeah, for sure.
But
how about Fallen Angels?
Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
No.
Like, I would consider that.
Skip it.
Yeah, definitely.
Like classic young adult with all its Christian goodness.
Right.
And then Harry Potter, especially, you know, mid cycle Harry Potter. Like, I feel like there's like a pretty big difference between the first three Harry Potters and the last four. It seems like that's really when they kind of shifted a little bit and became what it ended up becoming as a whole.
Right.
And it seemed like, I'm sure largely in part to the oodles of money that Harry Potter was bringing in, even before the movie started. I don't know when the movie started, probably right around that time, to be honest.
2001, I think.
Really? Because the first book, I think, was late 90s, wasn't it?
That's a real quick... I want to say the first movie came out, I was my freshman year in college, so...
That is a pretty quick turnaround. I think that the whole, like, idea of what that genre is, or maybe that format, I don't think it maybe was a genre before that. Certainly wasn't marketed as one. Really started to shift with Harry Potter and then kind of calcify with Twilight, which is this idea that they are largely expected to be serial and sort of like a universe unto themselves, very character heavy and very supernatural.
Twilight is YA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets a little sexy, but it's clearly targeted for teenage girls.
Yeah.
And that's that kind of like 4 to 8 year period in there, I think, is really kind of a second maybe era of young adult, maybe in a bit of a golden age for him.
But Twilight wasn't the one you started with matching with Harry Potter. It was the other big thing.
Well, then I was going to say, so then kind of following that was The Hunger Games.
Right.
The Hunger Games seems to be
I'm
gonna really
let you talk now.
The kickoff. It seems like The Hunger Games really kicked off like the modern era of this.
Right.
Which is just everything is some combination of supernatural or post-apocalyptic teenage revenge save the world story.
Right.
They're all serialized and they're all really jockeying to have movies made out of them.
Right.
It kind of seems to be, at least for me, those sort of three kind of periods all sort of separate out.
Right. So I imagine that most of your affection for YA comes from the first period, right?
Maybe, but I didn't read Harry Potter until the last book came out, and then I kind of read them all and I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I did have a period where I read quite a bit of YA books in that, you know, and a lot of it was this kind of idea of, wow, there's a lot of pretty decent stories out here that maybe, you know, part of it was my age. I was in my earlier 20s where it's like, yeah, I didn't really consider kids' things worth my time.
Right.
But these are some kids' things that are worth my time. What else is out there? And I think at the time there was probably a bunch of, there was like the Lemony Snicket's things and like all those other things that were, they were worthwhile. So I enjoyed them too. The Hunger Games and Post, all that stuff is, I don't like it. But then the other thing that kind of occurred to me was really this is, at least it seems to me, the first kind of genre or maybe literary movement, if we want to call it that, that came of age with the internet.
At least the second and third wave for sure,
right? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, the sort of modern incarnation of it, right, where now just everything needs to be serialized and an IP and, you know, able to be turned into a multimedia property,
IP,
intellectual property, like a franchise, you know, and it sort of plays very strongly into fandom culture and right. into sort of this idea that a story is not just a story, it's a experience that's supposed to exist in some kind of perpetuity.
Right.
And I can't think of any other, at least literary trends, that kind of were birthed in that. You know, I think some of them have adapted to it, right? We see sequels come up or sort of attempts to reopen older properties, but these ones are really created for it. And I think part of the reason I don't really care for the third age here is that it just seems like kind of a gold rush where the gold's been tapped. And there's just so much just dreck. They're all the same. You go into that section in the bookstore and they all look the same. They got this, it seems like they hire the same Photoshop artist for all the covers and,
right.
you know, and it's just, whoa.
Well, yeah, it's trying to capitalize on a feeling versus the actual text, right? There's also something to the idea of the internet nurturing the increase or the popularity of YA, and that's usually YA wasn't treated with respect by the major critical outlets, right? Like, you're not going to get a lot of YA reviews in the New York Times or New York Review of Books, probably. So if you do it instead on Tumblr or on Twitter or on blog or something like that, or on YouTube especially, there's a venue for sincere, earnest criticism and discussion of these texts that just wasn't there before, right? So then you didn't have to read in isolation. You actually had a community all of a sudden of people who wanted to read these books and talk about them with you when no one else really was. And that's part of the whole nerd culture phenomenon anyway, right? Both the people who consumed these, you know, Star Wars and sort of like the post-Star Wars texts growing up and becoming powerful or having control over media in some way. And then also readers feeling like they don't have to worry, go to or have a friend who reads these books and talk about, can, you know, find a friend on the internet. You know, it doesn't have to be your neighbor or someone in school. You can find anyone anywhere and talk about whatever YA series you're reading on Tumblr and have that connection, where we just didn't have it before, right? There was no, if you were at the comic book store and talked to comic book people, that's great. But if not, you were on your own, right? So Dave, you've read Harry Potter a couple times, right?
Yeah, I started Harry Potter a few years ago, read through the first five and was enjoying it, and then I can't remember what happened. I think we talked about it on an old, probably a book hockey.
Yeah.
But I got derailed, and then I started over from the beginning again a couple of years after that, and then zipped right through all seven. And I really liked it. It has not made me seek out any other Yah.
I was going to ask, that you don't seem like a Yah reader, but you do really enjoy that series.
I guess not, but I'm not against the idea, and it's not something that I fail to understand like it was at the beginning. You know, when Harry Potter first sort of exploded, I was in my, I don't know, mid-20s, I guess, and probably just sneering at everything at that point. But I saw a lot of people my age and older reading Harry Potter. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? I don't understand. What's wrong with these people?
Right.
But now that I have read it, I get it.
Right.
I totally understand. It also feels like, I believe I read somewhere that more than half of YA readers are adults now. And so I think once that trend started picking up steam and YA clearly was something that adults were doing as much as young adults, I think writers started catering to that.
Or publishers.
Well, publishers too, yeah. Or maybe if not even more so. Or stuff that might otherwise have been labeled like genre fiction of another kind is now being labeled YA because even if it's written for adults, kids can still read it.
I think that's a big one. I remember there was a whole wave of established literary authors releasing some sort of sci-fi YA, but they weren't sci-fi YA like The Maze Runner, The Hunger Games. Colson Whitehead did one, and
how much of it do you read?
None.
Not ever.
I read the first Hunger Games book. I got through maybe a third of the second one before I just stopped. No, I like the first one, No Harry Potter. Any to my students' eternal chagrin. Otherwise, very mad at me about that. I mean, I read it when I was a kid. I read Maniac McGee, which came several times in the YA game.
Right.
And, you know, sort of books like Hatchet, The Giver, stuff like that. But then, this maybe is for a different episode, one in the future. Recommended reading list from, like, school took over my reading when I was about 13, maybe even older than, or younger than that.
Yeah.
And those were, like, canon, right? So, all of a sudden, it was 1984, Fahrenheit 451, stuff like that. That I was seeking out to read versus contemporary young adult fiction of that time.
Right.
Goosebumps maybe would count, I suppose. But then again, that's when I was in fifth grade.
Right.
Yeah, and today I would, it would, there are so many things that would hit my list before that, except for comics.
Including going back and rereading something like, for example, Hatchet or The Giver.
Oh yeah, probably would never.
Really?
Might do The Giver just out of curiosity. If I was going to do it for like the podcast, for instance, we'd be happy to do that, but I don't. The
Giver holds up.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. But I also, it's just not going to be on the list. You know, thinking back to something you said before about, like, as time grows shorter, that's definitely not, my curiosity is a different direction than that.
Right.
And it's not, it's no shade. It's nothing about why it's bad or wrong. And I'm not judging anyone who reads it. Lots of people that I know and love do, but my interests are elsewhere.
Right.
And I say comics, but even comics, like, so maybe one question I'm going to address with the two of you right now is, we tend to call YA genre, but it's not really, right? Or like, YA is not a genre anymore, at least. YA is just a different category because the genres within that distinction are pretty varied. You wouldn't call Twilight and Hunger Games the same genre. They're pretty different books in terms of their flavor.
I mean, I think we got into this a little bit when we did one of the episodes on literary fiction, which was, I think for a while, it used to just be like young reader stuff was a different section of the library or bookstore.
Totally.
And then all the genres were still split out there. And then it seems like it's easier just to market things as YA. So, I mean, there's like subgenres kind of by shelf if you go to the thing, but that's really become that's what it's called, right? And part of it is, I mean, it's got to be up over 70% of it is supernatural in some way. It's really what it feels like. So
there's also a healthy amount of YA that is realist fiction, right? About like people's struggles and so forth.
But they put it right in the same shelf,
right? So that's what
I'm
saying.
Don't hear about it as much.
Well, there's like books like Wonder and things like that.
The Hate You Give, that kind of stuff, right?
There's that. I'd say that's probably the second biggest category.
Yeah,
but they're just put on the shelf together.
Right. I think that's interesting to me because you wouldn't call literary fiction adult fiction and call it a genre, right? Like, or you wouldn't call fiction period adult fiction and call it a genre because that would include mystery, horror, literary fiction, yes.
Scary books.
Scary books. Travel literature, the whole shebang, right? So it seems like YA, this maybe is a good development, that YA is just a audience category and within that is a multiplicity of genres that is good to have, right? I'd rather sort of have YA sort of thought as, just a kind of literature, but within it there's scary literature and mystery and realism drama and travelogue and that kind of stuff.
Everything should be Dewey Decimal. That's my vote.
Right. Conan the Librarian. So this came up for me a little bit this summer. I taught a creative writing class for the first time, and it was really fun. But I noticed that all my students, you know, they were ages probably from 20 to 22, maybe, just judging by their interest in the class, all described their early reading experiences as reading YA, the big YA at the time, Harry Potter, Hunger Games.
Formative experiences were Harry Potter, Pokemon, and SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, right. But thought of literature as that's the model to emulate, right? Mm-hmm. That was the game. And even when they described their sort of goals as writers or things they wanted to work on, even one student even used the word franchise in her description of her work. She wrote a story that was, she thought, the beginning of a franchise. And it struck me when I read that, it was like drinking sour milk. Just the idea of thinking about literature as a franchise, as like as a young writer, someone who was just starting out, to be already thinking the business side of things and trying to game it that way, struck me as really cynical. But probably it's more realistically just the outcome of thinking about the fiction you consume as serialized and primed to be translated into different media, right? But it's it seems like a different setup. When I was an undergrad, and even before that, I think, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like most people who were writing in those classes wanted to be Updike or Hemingway or some version of literary fiction, right? A couple of genre outliers here and there, but most of the people, for sure, in our program were writing towards that kind of literary fiction goal. These students, not a one of them, cared about Updike or Hemingway.
Yeah.
And it changed their writing, I think. And not in a bad way or necessarily in a sort of, this isn't a problem I'm saying, but yeah. It definitely was something I observed.
My initial reaction is to be a snob.
Right.
And turn my nose at that. But then I wonder if that's such a bad thing. Like, I mean, we've also talked extensively, and you can go listen to our old podcast episode about MFA programs.
Right.
Statistically, no one you ever meet in any of your classes is going to be an Updike or Hemingway.
Sure, sure.
Or probably even be close.
Right.
However, and then so, you know, a lot of our dissatisfaction with an MFA is like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Right. This is just, I'm paying money for nothing. Right. It's not helping me get there. These people are not being helped with this.
Yeah.
Right. So what's the end game here?
Yeah.
Right. But there's, you know, we can see the way that sort of our media landscape has changed pretty dramatically in the last 15 to 20 years. There's potentially lots of jobs and lots of useful skills out there in working on a creative team that builds up. Like, how many writers are involved in, like, Star Wars as a franchise right now?
Right.
Probably thousands.
Hmm.
Right? Between the shows and the comics and the movies and the whatever else, the back of the action figures and, like, all these things are these like, you know, conglomerate team efforts, which sounds gross and sort of like some kind of corporate dystopia. But at the same time, I mean, that's a useful thing to be learning. Right?
Yeah.
People enjoy the hell out of that.
Right.
Right. And if you are learning in your collegiate classes how to write the kind of fiction that is appreciated and commodified, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No. No, I agree. I don't think you're not wrong about that. Though I will say that, and maybe this is a bad example because this is a small test group, but most of those students in the course that I was talking about didn't really know how to establish character or basic plot. They wrote backstory. They knew backstory and they knew world building because YA novels of that ilk do a lot of world building, and then the plot kicks in, right?
Right, but I mean, they're freshmen at college.
Not freshmen, but yeah, you're right. Like I said, bad, limited case example for sure. But I feel like even when I was undergrad, I knew how to write a character and a plot. Like, I knew how to set a story in motion. They're so fixated on the rules of the world they're writing about, which has to come directly from, you know, The Hunger Games, that kind of thing, right? It's like this.
Yeah, I mean, establish the everything rules. Is a multimedia universe.
Yeah, and so my reaction to these stories was often, well, this is great, but the story has to start at some point. Like, this is 10 pages of establishing the setting and the sort of the rules of this universe, but what's going to happen? What's the character going to walk out the door? We were telling one student directly, it was like, this character must talk to someone. They can't just sit by a rock thinking about the world. They have to go out into that world and do something with it. So, yeah, not a bad thing necessarily, but definitely a different thing, and it really altered my sense of how to teach that class and how to think about talking to students now about writing, because there isn't that same common language of, well, you want to be Stuart Dybbuk. Like, that's not necessarily going to connect. Even though they like that story a lot, I don't think they saw that as like, oh, I should write like this. They saw it more as interesting, but I'm going to write like Susan Collins.
And make money.
Unlike, well,
Stuart Dybbuk. Right?
Not until we start the Dybbuk podcast and start funneling him money for our Patreon.
Right. Dybbuk all day back. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, let us know what you're reading, YA-wise or YA-wise. Twitter, at YakBabies. Email is YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/YakBabies is where our Patreon is located for $1 a month. You can access, that's $12 a year. That's, I don't think what you spend $12 on for a year, but it's probably not a lot, right? Even, like, what's the cheapest thing you think you buy for $12 a year?
I think we made an entire hot pot of pig uterus soup for less than $12 last time.
We sure did. That's going to last the whole year.
Yes. Yeah. It's going to stay with me the rest of my
life. Yeah. I said that's it. Actually like maybe 10 years worth of big uterite soup. You can get, for that $1, you can get access to our bonus episodes. There's lots of stuff happening on Patreon that's really fun. Goofy, weird episodes, stories that aren't fit for polite company, and anywhere in between. So check those out. Until then, Yak Babies yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to send an extra thank you to everyone who listens regularly, and especially to those who have supported on Patreon, past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, and William Howard Taft.
Oh.